Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. South Dakota lawmakers have introduced 534 bills and 19 joint resolutions, at least that's what they're looking at, which means there's a lot to talk about with the Dakota political junkies. Dana Ferguson is with the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. She's a watchdog government reporter, and she joins us on the phone from Pierre. Dana, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me, Lori.
And we have a new Dakota political junkie, but not new to STPB viewers or folks in South Dakota. J.J. Perry is executive editor of the Aberdeen American News. He joins us on the phone from Aberdeen. J.J., welcome.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for being here. Dana, let's start with the free speech bill, because there's a student free speech bill. It was covered this morning. Give us a little overview of what it's seeking, and then we'll play a little audio from the conversation this morning.
Sure, and I won't spoil it because the Education Committee took some action on it, so we'll wait until just a little bit later to tell you what happened there. But students at Sioux Falls Lincoln High School were looking to set up a proposal that would essentially bar school administrators from engaging in prior restraint or censorship of material that student journalists put forward. They said it wasn't an issue that they're necessarily dealing with right now, but they want to make sure that student journalists aren't having to self-censor or worry about running afoul of administrators when it comes to publishing controversial issues. And they said this is something they're worried about right now. They have to think about whether they're going to upset administrators when they publish stories that are about serious topics. And they wanted to make sure that students' free speech in that regard is protected. So that came up in committee this morning. Action was taken, but I will let listeners hear a little bit from those who testified on the bill before we say anything more.
All right. This unfolds slowly. Here's a little bit of the discussion. And this is Gage Gramlich, who is he's a junior at Lincoln High School. And he's the one who's sort of standing up and talking for this bill as a student journalist. And Representative Stevens having a little conversation. You'll hear Representative Stevens first.
So let me ask you this. If we had a law, as opposed to this bill, that says every person may freely speak, write, and publish on all subjects, being responsible for the abuse of that right, would you be okay with that law as opposed to this bill?
Well, absolutely not, because that would offend our First Amendment rights.
Well, did you know that that's Article 6, Section 5 of the Bill of Rights of the South Dakota Constitution?
I did not.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it's kind of already covered, don't you think?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I think I understand where you're coming from, and I appreciate that sentiment. I think the proof is in the pudding here. That's not the case. That's not what's happening in our schools. I see it every single day. Every single story that's not about homecoming, we have to wonder, is this going to result in censorship? Is this going to result in punishment? Is this going to result in any negative thing for our paper?
That's Representative Stevens and Gage Gramlich. This kid, Dana, tell me a little bit about, as you, you interviewed Gage. There's a video of him on ArgusLeader.com. Tell me a little bit about him and his calmness under this sort of pressure.
Yeah, certainly. Well, he is just an extremely well-spoken student, a very passionate student journalist. He did very well under pressure today in committee. There were a number of lawmakers who asked tough questions of him, and I think he fielded them very well, and the legislators let him know that they were very impressed with him. Some said he should go on to become a lawyer, or if not a lawyer, potentially
a journalist.
So from
a lot goes on to be a journalist.
So he is extremely passionate about this issue and heard about it from a journalism conference he'd attended with other student journalists.
Sure.
He and another student from Lincoln testified in front of the committee. And am I able to tell listeners what happened?
Let's do one more, and then we'll bring JJ into the conversation.
Okay.
A little bit. And tell me if I pronounce Representative Mueller. Am I saying that right? I guess I don't know.
Mueller.
Is it Mueller? Yeah. And here's Gage Gramlich having a little more conversation.
Because the schools are funded by the taxpayer,
in the classroom, if you're going to present one side of an issue, you need to have somebody on the other side presenting as well. So what would you do to balance, in my opinion, the newspapers tend to be a little bit more liberal to me. I mean, if you're pro-choice and anti-gun on your in your articles, who's going to be the pro-life and pro-gun? Because if taxpayers are paying for it and you're there to provide honest reporting, then who's going to represent both sides? Are you going to make sure in every newspaper that's printed there's two sides to every story?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Absolutely, and that's incredibly important to have, you know, non-biased reporting. And what this bill does, as I've said, is it brings in post-high school conditions, right? We're creating a condition where it's professional journalism, and what happens in professional journalism when your paper is biased is people stop reading it.
Let's bring J.J. Perry into the conversation. J.J., the journalism on the line in the State House. What are your thoughts before we find out how it all unfolded this morning?
Well, first I just want to say that for the student who testified today, he's somebody I think we're all going to keep an eye on, I suppose.
Right?
I wouldn't tell him to consider a career in law. I think he's on a path that's quite good. This is a really tricky thing for the schools as far as what these student journalists are doing. And I understand the point of view of the administrators. The South Dakota Newspapers Association was involved in this as far as advocating for the bill. It is probably a bigger free speech issue. I do disagree, of course, with I think the senator there who was expressing sort of which side newspapers tend to be on. I think any good journalist is trying to tell all sides of a story, no matter where it leads them. It sounds like that's what the high school is attempting to do as well. So that's good.
Sort of revealing in the questions, though,
far
as what some of those thoughts might be. Dana, tell us what happened after all this compelling testimony.
Well, drum roll, please. The committee voted to send the bill to the 41st day, which effectively means it was tabled on an 11-3 vote. So that bill is not going to move on. But a number of legislators on the committee made a point of telling the students who came to testify that they were very impressed with them, that they supported their right to publish what they think is important. So we might hear more about this in the future, but this was not the bill that is going to ensure that freedom for student journalists.
Who was, who was on their side? Was there someone who sort of helped them figure out this process in the State House, Dana?
Yes. There were a couple of lobbyists representing school administrators, school boards, who brought forth their concerns about allowing students to have quite that much freedom. They said, you know, there needs to be some limitation on the freedoms you're giving student journalists. They need to be in an environment where there is guidance or consideration for what you might be putting out there, and potentially additional comments from the administration if it could pose concerns for the school, for students. So it didn't make it today, and I think legislators were receptive to the arguments of those school officials.
J.J. Perry, here's what I'm wondering, and it has to do with workforce development. When we look at what the kids in high school are doing and giving them the technical education that we want them to have, we talked yesterday about welding programs. This seems like in order to help student journalists, you know, move into a career path, you might want them not to just be writing about homecoming and give them a little more of a real life experience. Do you think that there's an argument there about, growing the next batch of responsible journalists?
Well, absolutely. And I think some of that rests on, if it's a club or a class, whoever adult in the room, I guess the teacher or the sponsor, that they can help shepherd the students along to learn. You know, journalism is a really funny thing because some student, a sophomore in high school right now, could start up a blog or use their Twitter feed to report on their city government or their school board or whatever it is, and that's journalism. So unlike some other trades, you know, where you sort of learn, but until you go out into the workforce or have an internship or something to have practical experience, with journalism, students can actually start practicing tomorrow if they care to. Which is very exciting, but also, you know, could potentially cause issues for a school system or a school. So I think having that good professional adult mentor type who helps the students through that process, I think that's pretty important. And every reporter needs a good editor. That's what I keep telling our reporters. So,
JJ, did you write for your high school newspaper?
I sure did. Yes.
Yeah. Can you put yourself in their shoes right now and say, you know, what that feeling is like to sort of walk the line between, you know, writing what you think needs to be said and covering the stories that you think are intriguing and compelling, but also understanding that the administration could, you know, pull some prior, you know, censorship, if you want to use that word.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I was in high school maybe 30 years ago when I was on the high school newspaper. And back then we had a very good mentor who put together a very good staff and a very good, direction for the students. And we did stories, just as you'd expect, on drugs, homelessness, runaways, all kinds of things that, you know, maybe weren't making parents happy, but certainly were accurate and things that were happening. I think the key difference from 30 years to today is social media, of course. Mm-hmm. That adds a whole new wrinkle. So if someone gets a story wrong or something goes haywire, those stories live on in a way that my bylines from Washington High School in South Bend, Indiana, do not live on anymore, thankfully.
Right. Yeah.
And also I think that people are much more sensitive to those kinds of things and how it all works out. So I think those are challenges that today's students have that we just didn't have.
Yeah. We better move on. I could probably talk about this all hour, but there's some pretty compelling other stories out there, too. So, Dana, let's jump to third political parties and this story with, getting on the ballot and what that means, lawsuits, Chantel Krebs is involved. Give us an overview, Dana.
So my colleague Jen Holt has been covering this a little bit from Sioux Falls, and Secretary of State Chantel Krebs testified yesterday in a case. The ACLU and a couple of political parties, the Libertarian Party of South Dakota, Constitution Party of South Dakota, brought a case against the Secretary of State, essentially saying it's too hard to get on the ballot when you're one of these third-party candidates. The expectations are maybe too high, and they should be altered to reflect that there just are not all that many registered Constitution Party or Libertarian Party voters in the state. And essentially yesterday, the Secretary of State agreed with them and said, you know, it is difficult. We acknowledge that, and there is legislation now in the works, House Bill 1286, which would take some of those suggestions and reconsider the support needed to get a third-party candidate on the ballot, adjusting some of those expectations so it might be more realistic for them to be able to do that without spending unusual amounts of time crisscrossing the state looking for members of their party to sign their petitions.
Sure. JJ, thoughts on this one? Third parties in the state and what needs to be done?
Yes, well, absolutely, because the third parties are sort of in a tough spot. If you're someone from the Constitution Party or Libertarian Party, which we have a fairly active Libertarian Party up here in Aberdeen and Brown County, you know, which comes first, the chicken or the egg. I think if you're on the ballot, it sort of generates those people's interest and their curiosity about your candidates and your positions. But to get on the ballot is tricky. So it sort of is a tough thing for those third-party candidates. But this is definitely something that I think a lot of people are going to be interested in, especially considering that a lot of elections and a lot of races in South Dakota a lot of times get decided in the primaries versus in the general election. So,
And JJ, you mentioned a few minutes ago about mentoring in journalism, and let's jump to another Senate-approved bill talking about mentoring for hunting and removing some of those age limits. What do you know about this one?
Yes, this is a bill that came from Senator Jason Frerichs from up here in Wilmot. He's a Democrat. And had pretty good support here. Senators agreed to his plan to eliminate the current minimum age of 10 years for a person to go on a mentored hunt. So this is kids who go out with an adult. Now, the adult can't hunt at the same time. They have to be there to observe and mentor and coach if you're under 16. But this sort of allows kids who may be, I suppose, 8 or 9, you know, depending on the on the kid, to be able to hunt with a mentor. So, you know, every child is different and every experience is different. So this just opens it up to families being able to instill that hunting tradition in their kids at a younger age.
Dana, it seems like we could do a whole hour on just how the State House is dealing with underage, overage, ages of this, what's too old to do this, what's too young. So let's talk about under 21 tobacco sales. Let's how is that a topic right now? What's being discussed?
Sure. Well, there is a proposal that advanced out of committee just yesterday that would increase the minimum age for buying tobacco products, you know, cigarettes or that kind of thing. And so that moves now to, I believe, the House floor. And it'll be interesting to see what legislators do with it there. Obviously, you're in a body that is very concerned about ensuring that South Dakotans have their freedoms, that there aren't undue burdens. But in committee, there was a fair amount of conversation about health issues, concerns about young people getting addicted to tobacco. I would anticipate the arguments we heard for decreasing the age to buy alcohol if you are a member of the military, right, an active duty member, might come into play too. I would anticipate if someone thinks someone serving their country can drink at age 18, they'd have the same argument for having a cigarette. But I suppose time will tell there, and we'll have to see if this is something that the body is supportive of at this time. I think it could be a pretty close vote. Don't quote me on it, right, because I've been wrong on these things before, but an interesting debate to be certain.
JJ, is the public health conversation? Is it an economics conversation? Clearly, when we talked about, when we heard the conversations about the drinking age for active duty military members, there was a huge, you know, price tag to it. What do you think about this one? Is it mostly public health? Is there an economic impact?
Well, I think it would be nice if it was public health, and these things tend to get brought up with that in mind, you know. And with smoking, that's a little bit different than drinking, is it does have an effect on folks around you who aren't necessarily smoking. But I think that the underlying piece of the economics of it, and if we were to limit grocery stores or C-stores from selling tobacco to people under 21, I think that's going to be the key piece for most folks to not disrupt that business and not disrupt, you know, folks' right to do things like smoke or whatever it is, as long as it's legal. We've had several cases up here. You know, I'm sure they have them in Sioux Falls too. Those police stings where they go in and buy cigarettes or buy alcohol to see if folks are carting them. I think that, you know, the enforcement of that would get pretty tricky too. So,
Dana Fergus, anything else that you're looking at today that's top of mind for you before we wrap up?
Oh boy, many things.
Too big. Them. Too big of a question.
I stepped out. Sorry, I stepped out of a committee hearing for this phone call as senators are taking up conversations of craft beer restrictions. We could see two sort of competing bills coming out of committees last night and then this afternoon, setting up an interesting conversation about how much craft brewers should be able to make, whether they should be able to self-distribute. Some of that is in the works at this very moment. And additional conversation coming up today about the initiated measure process. I'm sure we'll be hearing more about that, so stay tuned.
Dana Fergus, thanks so much for being here. J.J. Perry, welcome aboard. Thanks for being
Thank
here
you.
As well.
Thanks.
J.J. Perry is executive editor for Aberdeen American News. Dana Fergus with the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. She's a watchdog government reporter. You can hear what's happening in PR right now at SD.net. Find Dana at ArgusLeader.com. J.J. at Aberdeen. Oh, I forgot his website. Aberdeen American News. You can look that up online. We'll get it. AberdeenNews.com. That's it.